Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Co-host Joe with you all today. Always a blast to be in with you all. And, well, the Silk or Joe Show comes to you courtesy of the Main Street Radio Network. So if you want to thank them for keeping us on the air, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. This show is entirely a product of theirs, been around since November of 2013. So we're approaching lucky number 13. We're in our 13th year right now, which means that we turn 13 in November. Yes, that's how that terminology works. So MainStreetRadioNetwork.com, great website resource to find out more information about the show, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com, and you'll also find out about the Alan Nathan Show up there, podcast for both programs, and an app for Android users. If you last updated the app before June 30th, time to re-update it. Although, if you're listening to this show on the app, then you must have updated it already. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to hear it because that was the update. The update was to reflect that we are distributed, our streaming is handled by the Salem Radio Network, as well as other distributions now by the Salem Radio Network. Well, I say now. Let me rephrase that. The Salem Radio Network, they distributed the show in other ways, but now they handle the stream for our website, too. So, which is reflected in the Android app that I mentioned. And also the stream can be found at MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. We are also on social media, though. Facebook at Main Street Radio Network and X at Main Street Radio. We don't even have our own X page, folks. This show is entirely a product of the Main Street Radio Network. Although I think at some point we had a page on social media, or at least the Silk in the title, Jane Silk, had a page on X for herself. But the last time I checked, that hadn't been updated in like 4 years now, so... I think it's safe to say it's been abandoned, and we also had our own social media page for a while on Getter, GETTR.com, at Silk or Joe Show, but I ditched that page this year, honestly. There was no interactions. There was like 1,600 bots and 200 real people that followed us, and I might be stretching the numbers of real people on that one. There might have been bots as well, so there wasn't much going on there, so I just didn't really see a reason to keep it afloat if there was no attention, no interaction, no nothing, and I myself kept not handling it and was only posting once a week anyway. Yeah, that didn't seem worthwhile. Maybe revive it someday. But I digress, because we got to get into the show. We got to get into the topics, which, well, the love to hate and hate to miss, so to speak, as the intro announced. Wasn't my idea for that intro, by the way, but anyway. What is going on in the world? Well, we are going to have a few guests on today about radical leftists and how radical the left has become, and just absolutely absurdly nutso the Democrat Party is becoming. Now, the question is it because the Democrats are boiling off the sane folks for the insane folks, or is it because they've totally converted their mindsets? Now, keep in mind, 75 million Democrats voted for Kamala Harris back in 2024, which seems to be a strong indicator that the party is very strong. But could that just be people who, I'll vote even though I'm disappointed, I'll still vote for them, but I don't actually believe this garbage, I just think Trump is that much worse of a threat? Or, I mean, so much more of a threat that they will vote for a literal Nazi who is accused of beating his exes, as they did in Maine with Graham Plattner. But here's the thing with Graham Plattner, too. I did not mention the rape charge and the rape allegation in that, because it hadn't come out yet by the time of the primary. So the average voter out there only would have heard about that he was a Nazi and also that he had beaten his exes. That's the only allegations he would have heard. They would have heard. They would not have heard about the rape one, which came after, which was allegedly the final nail in the coffin, because, you know, you can beat up your exes, and you can be a Nazi. The Democrat Party is a big tent party, but they finally closed the doors of that tent when you were actually accused of sexual assault. Just, the bar for what they can't consider a quality candidate is exceedingly low, I guess. But they justified it, though. They said anything to beat Trump. If this guy can beat Susan Collins, that's like beating Trump, we'll take him. But the irony is, Susan Collins is almost a moderate Democrat, almost the kind of Democrat you have expected to have in, you know, 20 years ago. So that is considered Trump-aligned and too radical for the Democrat Party these days. Someone who isn't always in agreement with Trump, who often backstabs him, someone who conservatives call a rhino, that person is still too far to the right for Maine to tolerate, for Maine Democrats to tolerate. So far to the right, in fact, that Maine Democrats were willing to have a Nazi wife, ex-beater, a Nazi who beats exes, a Nazi who beats women. They figure that that would be a better alternative to a rhino, because that is how far to the left they are. So far to the left, that a rhino seems like a Trump supporter in their eyes. And so we got to put a Nazi who beats his exes in there, and that'll show them. What is the thinking? And the guy won 72% of the votes in their primary, so it's not like that was even close. There were two other candidates on the ballot, and neither of them could score any points. One of them had dropped out of the race months before because she wasn't doing any good. She couldn't beat this powerhouse Nazi that the Maine Democrats supported. So this party is radical, but it's not just in Maine that you're seeing this signs of radicalization. It's all over the place. I mean, look at all the candidates that in New York City, look at how those recent primaries went to. All these Democrat socialist candidates start winning. And New York City, you know, at the very least, you would think that they would remember 9/11, but instead they elect for state senator someone who believes New Yorkers deserved 9/11. So these folks who might have lost a loved one, might have lost a friend in the attacks, might know someone who lost someone in those attacks. Talk about lack of empathy. You know, Democrats say we're the party of empathy and tolerance, but yeah, we'll vote for someone in state senate who said the city deserved to be attacked, 3,000 of our residents deserve to die. Yeah, we'll vote for that. And in Colorado, they did much the same thing, although you can forgive them a little bit because 9/11 didn't happen in Colorado. They were rather far removed from it. So maybe you can forgive them for voting in a similar person who had similar beliefs on 9/11 and the Democrat primaries out there. But again, that's considered the moderate position, I guess, in the Democrat Party. We're told it's moderate and common sense. Like, we're told in the state of Virginia, all these Democrats come in and we're told that everything they're doing is moderate and common sense. All these new taxes, all these tax hikes, tripling the wages of the state legislature and paying for it by hiking taxes in the name of affordability. And we're told that that's what common sense moderates do, redistrict the state into oblivion so that only, illegally, mind you, redistrict the state into oblivion. We're told that that's the moderate common sense approach, and also their moderate common sense approach to marijuana legalization, where basically the only reason that children aren't allowed to have marijuana right now is because Democrats cheated the law and decided, well, the law doesn't actually say what it says, so just do what we say and not what the letter of the law is. And that's the only reason why children aren't allowed to possess marijuana at this moment, because of the law that Democrats themselves wrote until they saw how unpopular it was going to be, which seems to be the running gag with the Democrats. They'll go as radical as they can until they see how unpopular it is. Look what happened to Plattner in Maine. He got replaced when they saw how unpopular he was against Susan Collins, who was looking so easy to beat that they thought that a Nazi ex-beater could do it. Anyway, but then there's also Democrats in Wisconsin now, in the governor's race. You wouldn't think this in Wisconsin, I guess, because it seems so Midwesty. But yeah, three Democrat candidates were at this Muslim forum, and they each vowed to protect Sharia law. Now, what Sharia law is how Muslims get around the Constitution. To Muslims, Sharia law is overriding any law of the land, including the United States Constitution. And they tend to enforce those laws against non-Muslims when they come into power. And one such law, of course, is apostasy. You can't leave the faith. If you do, that's the death penalty. That's what Sharia law is. But these Democrat candidates, they come in, and female genital mutilation too, and also all these other anti-feminist measures. So what do these Democrats do? One of the Democrat socialist candidates, the other two, I guess, more moderate, they all agree, yeah, Sharia is great. We'll protect it. We'll protect your ability to mutilate female genitals. We'll protect your ability to kill people who leave your faith. We'll protect your ability to have the patriarch control the entire family. Will protect your ability to oppress women. Yes, we Democrats will protect all of that because your religion is different and therefore it should supersede any sort of Judeo-Christian thing like the United States Constitution, which is evil and founded by slavers and all that sort of thing. Should we really be surprised? Democrats are looking for any law of the land to replace the Constitution, and if they can adequately represent people who want to replace the Constitution with their own laws, well, that just goes right along with what Democrats want. The mistake they're making, though, by allying with Muslims is the same mistake that progressives in Iran made by allying with Muslims back in the 1970s, and that is the Muslims aren't going to be your allies for much longer. I mean, gee whiz, Hamtramck, Michigan, the LGBTQ community found out that the Muslims that they helped get elected aren't going to be their allies much longer because suddenly they couldn't fly their precious pride flags on government property and were labeled as part of an evil militia if they tried by the Muslims who took power in Hamtramck, courtesy of these folks. So first thing they do is come into power and toss you over the side of a roof, but Democrats will keep making that mistake, keep trying to appeal to them because they see Muslims and Sharia law as the future of the country. All you women out there, you're going to be slaves to your men eventually. But I mean, I guess, you know, you keep mentioning Handmaid's Tale. I guess you'll love that sort of thing. We got more Silk or Joe Show after this break, so stick with us. All you Democrat women, I should say. You Republican women, you're all right.
Just in time for the 4th of July, Amazon Prime is helping members save on two of summer's biggest expenses, fuel and food. Amazon grocery savings expert Griffin Buck explains.
Between July 2nd and the 5th, Prime members can save 50 cents per gallon on one fuel purchase at more than 7,500 participating BP, Amoco, AMPM, and Thornton's locations nationwide. Prime members can enjoy plenty of barbecue favorites under $10, produce under $4, and party-sized snacks starting at just $2. Plus, through July 7th, Prime members can save 50% on select ice cream and frozen treats online and in-store at Whole Foods Market. And members in eligible areas enjoy free same-day delivery on grocery orders over $25. Amazon offers a discounted membership to government assistance recipients and income-verified customers. Prime Access members can look forward to exclusive grocery savings. Look out for a $5 monthly credit from July to September.
Learn more at Amazon.com/Prime.
Ready to transform your side hustle into your career? Or does your small business need a better platform to grow and thrive? AI is helping everyday people turn side hustles into new business ventures. But while AI can help with the technology of starting a new business, there is more to think about. Deep Ubi, Global Head of Technology for Startups at Amazon Web Services.
In the AI era, founders don't need generic cloud guidance. They need answers tailored to their stage, their stack, and what they're actually building. AWS Startup Advisor delivers startups specific guidance informed by AWS Startup Solutions Architect expertise, helping founders make the right technical decisions. It gives startups more of the right context from day one so founders can stay focused on building. When startups get serious about scale, they come to AWS. We built AI-powered migrations, so the move is as fast as the decision. A full plan in minutes, and you choose how much help you want executing it.
For more information and to help give your startup the power it needs to grow and thrive, go to startups.aws.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm Jason Derulo. I love that music connects to people all over the country. But unfortunately, so does something else. Childhood hunger. 15 million kids struggle with hunger right here in America. And yet, every year, billions of pounds of surplus food in the U.S. go to waste instead of going to the children in need. Feeding America is working to change this. The Feeding America nationwide network of food banks rescues this surplus of food to help provide meals to families in virtually every community in the United States, including yours. But they just can't do this alone. Join me in the fight against hunger in America. For more information on what you can do to get involved, visit feedingamerica.org. That's feedingamerica.org. Together we can solve hunger. Together, we're feeding America. A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles, and access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at pva.org.
Welcome back to the Silk or Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all today. Always a blast to be here with you all. And I'm joined by a guest, Chris Talgo, Senior Editor and Research Fellow for the Stopping Socialism Project of the Heartland Institute. Chris Talgo, appreciate you joining us. How are you today?
How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. So the Heartland Institute, you all have a response here to the Democratic Socialists of America and their recently released platform, which I don't know why they bother with putting "of America" in the title of their organization, because they don't seem to want anything to do with America. What's your take?
Well, first of all, they want to transform American society. They want to draft a new constitution. I call them the degenerate socialists of America because that's what they really are. And I mean, if you go into this policy platform, it is wild stuff. I mean, we're not talking about only Green New Deal, you know, getting rid of prisons, getting rid of police, all sorts of free stuff. But we're also talking about getting rid of the president, getting rid of the Supreme Court, making Washington the 51st state. All sorts of just crazy stuff that would undo America as we know it.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem like they have an idea of what to replace it with. I mean, what do you do without police and prisons? Who's going to enforce the law? And, you know, Democratic Socialists, they're the ones who want to go – they seem pretty radical. They're the ones who want to put their opponents in gulags and stuff. We have that from audio leaks from Bernie Sanders supporters years ago. So, like, who are they – you know they value law enforcement of some sort, especially against political opponents. Who are they going to have?
Well, it's going to be a police state. That's what it's going to be. It's going to be a police state with the Democratic Socialists in charge in this nightmare, nation that they want to build. I mean, I just think it's crazy. I think that they probably went a step too far in this platform. We'll see what the American people think about it, but it does concern me because so many Americans, especially young people, and I used to be a social studies teacher in public high schools. They're buying this hook, line, and sinker. And not only the young people, but the overly educated, woke, white people in particular, white women, they are buying this stuff because it's so empathetic, apparently.
Yeah, they're not really aware of practicality, I guess. They're just, it's just appeals to emotional thinking and narcissism because, the world, these people seem to believe that the world deserves to hand everything to them on a silver platter, that just by existing they are entitled to all of these things, which come at the pain of other people, and they're ignoring what those other people might be entitled to.
Oh, the cognitive dissonance is just outrageous because on one hand, they're saying you have all these rights to housing, to free childcare, to free this and free that. But then on the other hand, they're saying, oh, we're going to enact what they call aggressive wealth taxes against the wealthy. They never put a monetary value on what the wealthy includes. Because the thing is, someone's got to pay for all this stuff. And what I want Americans to understand, especially working class Americans, is that we are going to be the ones who are paying for this stuff. The middle class people, the working class people, this is going to destroy any semblance of the American dream for people who are trying to move up the economic ladder. Because what it would do, it would pulverize economic mobilization.
Yeah, and well, people don't seem to understand that because they come up in these left-wing cities that are already suffering from the effects of this. So they think, oh, the American dream isn't working. We need to turn to socialism for all this free stuff. But what they don't understand, of course, is A, there's no such thing as free stuff. But B, the reason that they have all these problems is because they already live in the society that they want.
Absolutely. I mean, look at New York City. New York City, for the past, 10, 20 years now, has driven away so many of the productive people because they've been going ever further down the socialist path. And now they have a communist mayor. And we are seeing New York City evaporate before our very eyes. We've got 10 cities now in America's crown jewel. And it's sad. And it's, I'm in the Chicago area. Our mayor is not that far off from Mondami, and we've seen this in Seattle, we're seeing it in LA. It starts in the big cities, but I feel like it's just going to bleed into the suburbs, and then it's going to it's like a poison, like a cancer that's metastasizing across this country.
Yeah, and part of the reason too is that the folks that are chased out of these cities, they don't learn any better, and they just kind of vote along their beliefs, which led to those disasters to begin with. So now whatever new place they move to ends up turning like the old place they fled from.
Exactly. Yeah, that's one of the big problems. But then the other problem is that the DSA, they want no borders. They want total, you know, mass amnesty. They want millions more people to come in and really just change the demography of the United States. That's another big central plank of their crazy platform, is they want to actually harm American workers, because when you bring in a bunch of low-wage workers, that's going to bring down wages. So this is just really simple stuff, but the American people have to realize, you know, and go beyond stage one thinking here.
Yeah, Barack Obama himself actually won a Grammy for saying that huge influxes of illegal immigrants suppress wages and strain social safety nets back in 2006. So that shows how far left the party has drifted, when what was common sense back then is now, I mean, they're going to call you a bigot if you say such a thing today.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, and like you said, this is all emotional stuff. This is not about reason and logic and what is the best policy based on evidence and based on data. This is about just trying to pull on people's emotional, you know, heartstrings. And as a former U.S. history teacher, I am worried that a lot of 20-somethings, a lot of maybe even early 30 people in their early 30s, they have been brainwashed, and they do think that, well, democratic socialism is different from Marxism and socialism because it has a democratic, you know, label attached to it. There's nothing democratic about socialism. Socialism in and of itself is not democratic because it puts the state above all else.
It's like all those places that Democratic People's Republic of this or that, it never, yeah, never really was an accurate title. But I think it's further than that, though, that it's not just because it has democratic in front of it. It's because these people don't believe that communism and Marxism are bad. In fact, some of the democratic socialists out there outright say we're Marxists and communists.
Yeah, I mean, I experienced that when I was teaching in public high schools, where my fellow colleagues were they were not only revising history so that, Stalin, he really tried hard to make it so that everyone, you know, had a good life, when we all know that that's not true. But they are also saying that socialism can work in America because we are the richest nation in world history. But we all know that the reason why we're the richest nation in world history is because we have had free market capitalism. That is the solution to this.
Yeah, I guess they never learned that Aesop fable of the goose that laid the golden egg, and they don't realize that when you kill the goose to get the egg that you think is inside of it, it can't lay any more eggs for you.
Yeah, exactly. But that goes back to the stage one thinking. Well, if I just take from those people, then we'll have enough stuff. But then why would that incentivize those people to continue making stuff? Mm-hmm. There would be no incentive. So this is why I think it is incredibly important that we teach American students the reality about socialism, collectivism, Marxism, communism, and how anti-American it is, and how awesome we have it here in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Well, Chris Talgo, appreciate you being on the Alan Nathan, or the Silk or Joe Show, to talk about this. You'll be on the Alan Nathan Show later today. But real quick, where can the listeners find more of your work? We got 10 seconds left.
Heartland.org. That's where we have our big hub. So please go visit.
All right. Well, listeners, something for you to check out. We come up to a break. More Silk or Joe Show after this break.
Summer promotions are rolling out nationwide, with companies introducing deals, rewards, and limited time offers as part of America's 250th anniversary celebrations. With more, here's lifestyle expert Julie Lofrady.
Circle K is celebrating America's birthday, and the free Inner Circle Rewards program is your ticket to the party, unlocking the best deals all summer long.
And this summer, the fun doesn't stop there.
On July 1st, Inner Circle members can enjoy any size Polar Pop for just 25 cents at participating locations nationwide. Fans can also show their Polar Pop pride with new limited edition hats and tees available in stores now. Plus, through September 1st, play Scratch and Win daily in the Circle K app for a chance to win your share of more than 1 million in prizes, including free Polar Pops BOGO beverage offers and grand cash prizes of up to $25,000.
Download the Circle K app or visit CircleK.com/America-250 to learn more.
Fireworks by Matthew Burgess and Katia Chen is one of the most acclaimed children's books of the past decade and has earned multiple awards, including the prestigious 2026 Caldecott Medal. It's also the perfect book for summer reading, as it celebrates the sights and sounds of summertime as two siblings eagerly anticipate a spectacular fireworks display. Author Matthew Burgess.
Fireworks is a celebration of summertime and those everyday moments that loom so large and shine so bright in the hearts and minds of kids.
Illustrator Katia Chen.
To create the artwork for fireworks, I use cozy pastels, bold pops of paint, and even scratchboard to make the sights and sounds of a steamy summer day burst from the pages. I hope reading this book will become part of your own family's reading traditions anytime you want to revisit the warm memories of summer.
Perfect for summertime reading. Fireworks is available wherever books are sold.
May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and did you know that feeding birds is good for your mental health? A 2024 study confirmed what millions of Americans are already discovering. Birding isn't just a hobby, it's a wellness habit. Just 30 minutes of bird watching has been shown to reduce stress more effectively than a standard walk outdoors. Wildlife advocate Adrian Chizis is the Director of Consumer and Bird Engagement at Global Harvest Foods.
That daily ritual of noticing, watching, and being present is one of the simplest and most accessible good day habits anyone can build this month. And it's remarkably easy. You could be a bird watcher by the end of the day. All you need is a feeder, a bag of quality seed, and a spot near a window where you can enjoy the view.
Quality seed like Cool Bird Specialty Blends or Audubon Park Snack Stacks make it easy and keep the birds coming back. Visit morecoolbirds.com or audubonpark.com for beginner-friendly tips, seed guidance, and ideas for attracting birds to your yard.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably?
It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silk Road Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all today. Continuing to talk about them darn socialists out there with their crazy radical ideas that we dismissed, conservatives I seem to have dismissed 12 years ago when they were manifesting on college campuses, saying, oh, well, once they get to reality, it'll hit them. But instead, these kids came out and were like, you know what? We should make reality just like being on the college campus, just like being in a movie. No consequences for anything. Everything is given us for free, just like with our trust funds from mommy and daddy. And unfortunately, the statistic for a lot of these democratic socialists does seem to be coming from some material wealth. Either, I don't know, from what I've seen, I don't really see any like middle class folks, really. It seems to be either trust fund babies or folks from the streets who are drug addicts and just, you know, brought in for the muscle or something. It's kind of, you know, not really much in between the two. So I guess that's why they want to eliminate the middle class, because it's not really reflective of their demographics. It's either the super rich who won't be rich any longer, or the very poor who have nothing to lose and absolutely nothing to gain either from socialism, except the pleasure of seeing other people suffer the way they have in life. Socialism indeed does make life fair for everyone. Everyone suffers equally, except for a handful at the top. But, I mean, if you're not too concerned, if you're concerned with raw numbers, socialism actually does make the majority of people more equal than capitalism does. It just means that the majority of people, more people than in capitalism, are miserable. That's what it does. Brings you down to the lowest common denominator, but we've seen that and how Democrats kind of love doing that anyway. I mean, gee whiz, look at the state of Oregon with their education standards, where they decided that, you know what, black people, they're not doing too well in schools. So what we're going to do is we're going to lower the standards so that more of them graduate. Man, you look at, I wonder if they're doing that to inflate graduation rates, because West Virginia was beating them. So they thought, well, maybe if we change the qualifications a little bit, then we'll have more people graduating. And that to the detriment of society, because now you have people who pretty much have no education whatsoever being admitted into society and told, yes, you are qualified, when actually you aren't, and employers know that, and they're not going to take a chance on that. So it furthers the cycle of poverty. But that's the point. That's the thinking of the left. Well, we can't. These people are underperforming, so we'll lower the standards. We're not going to figure out how to make them perform better. We're going to make everyone else suffer. We're going to lower the bar here, and that's what they're going to do with your standard of living. If you have free housing, it's going to be a very much lower bar than what you're used to. And I mean, come on, we've seen this going all the way back to the Obama administration. Instead of working to improve the economy, they were telling you to get used to the economic malaise and distress as the new normal. You just got to get used to it. It's your fault for having higher expectations. It's not our fault for failing to deliver. It's your fault because, well, your expectations are just unreasonable. You know, these are the same people who'd say, well, the moon is way up there, so we have no reason to bother trying to reach for it. And I guess that is the height of socialist thinking right there. Why bother reaching for the moon when we can hand you something and call it the moon? We'll hand you some turds and call them the moon, and you'll be satisfied, otherwise we'll kill you. And that the violence is a definite core component of socialism. You've seen how violent those folks can get. I mean, gee whiz, they're the ones cheering the murder of ICE agents out there. They're the ones demanding that ICE agents be killed. And it's like they talk about, oh, we're empathetic. Well, what's empathetic about demanding murder? It's like, it's because deporting these people will cause so much harm that we just can't allow that to happen. But then you ask them what's so harmful about deporting them back to, say, Mexico. Are you saying Mexico is a terrible country? Well, no, that'd be racist if you said that Mexico was a terrible country. So now, you know, they're pinned by their own ideology. On the one hand, you know, it's like what I was talking about with the show on Venezuela when we took out Maduro. On the one hand, they were saying Venezuela is a terrible place. Refugees got to come here from Venezuela, and we got to accept all the Venezuelan refugees because it's just such a horrible place. Look at all the terrible things that they're fleeing. But then on the other hand, when Trump took out Maduro, those very same people were saying Venezuela is a paradise. Well, how can you have refugees from paradise? You know, they changed the argument just based on what they think will win, because as we were discussing in the last segment, it's entirely emotional. It's about what's going to give me the victory right now, and not about, you know, do I have logical consistency? Is my worldview consistent? You know, that's why they resort to insults and why they go to the ad hominem attacks, bigotry, and all sorts of other things that they will accuse you of, or, you know, a hatefulness. You're so full of hate. You're so bigoted. If only you could see the facts the way we do, which is entirely emotional because it just makes us feel good and we get to be patronizing and say that we're good people when actually we are god-awful, horrible human beings who want to destroy the country and who somehow got it into our heads that wealth grows on trees. Maybe it's because when Democrats are in charge, they print money like there's no tomorrow. Maybe it's because the Federal Reserve is still doing it. Quantitative easing, stimulus, all that sort of crap where they just pump out money, hyperinflation. You know, they seem to think that money has no value. That it's just paper, so you can print it. It means nothing. It's like they're trying to get to a post-scarcity economy without actually being post-scarcity. And what do I mean by that? I mean, a post-scarcity society is, you know, like you see on Star Trek or something, where you can go up to a computer and ask for food, and the computer just makes food out of thin air. You know, there's no more poverty, hunger, disease, or anything like that, because everyone's needs can be met, because there's enough resources out there, there's easy access to those resources. Neither of which are true. Neither of which are going to be true for quite some time, because we're just not at that level yet. And also because some of our society is a bit corrupt for that sort of thing to happen anyway. And what does socialism do? It just assumes we're already there. It assumes that the only reason that we don't have that is because there's a trillionaire. It doesn't look at the inefficiencies in government. It doesn't look at the very nature of humanity as being a bunch of greedy savages. It doesn't look at any of that. It just says, well, see, there's one guy right there who has a lot of money. That's the problem. If we can just take his money, and then you do. You kill the goose that's laying the golden egg, the economy shatters. Well, now you got to find someone else to take the money from. So you go to the next wealthiest people, take all their stuff. Well, now there's nothing left, and you've got even less out of them than you did out of the other people. So now you got to take from even more people and keep going and going like that. And eventually you get to the point where no one has anything except for a handful of people at the top. You replace the trillionaires with government, like Stalins, pretty much, who have the same power and the same wealth, pretty much, a bit more lethally able to enforce it because they are the government now, and who's going to stop them? Who's going to challenge them? You know, if you have a corporation out there, you can take them to court, you can do this or that. The corporation has no direct authority to get you killed. But under a socialist society, they actually have the authority to get you killed. They have the authority to force you to work as well. You know, a corporation has no authority to legal authority to force you to work for them, but a socialist government does. A socialist government will put you into that factory whether you want to or not. You know, a lot of these people, too, they seem to think that, they'll be paid to be an art student. They'll be paid to paint. They'll be paid to be an actor. They'll be paid to do this and that under a socialist society. They won't have to worry about anything because the government will pay them to do all these things. No. The government is going to force you into a job that serves society. We saw that in the Soviet Union. The government picked and chose who did what at the very beginning of your life. You ended up being chosen for whatever role you're going to fulfill in society. That's how it works, because there are jobs that need to be done. And that's, I guess the socialists, you know, they don't really have that in mind either. They don't understand that for society to function, jobs, certain things need to be done. I guess to them, trash magically disappears in the morning and the electricity comes from, I don't know, Zeus or something. And the food in the grocery store, well, that's just the local grocer makes it out of thin air overnight. And there's no concept of the infrastructure behind it. I guess it's just too complicated for a socialist to understand where everything comes from, that everything has an origin point, and that there eventually is a human that needs to be doing some lousy work. And their idea is, well, we need to make it not worth anyone's while to do that work. We need to make it so that the government pays you to just sit on your butt if you care to. And they've said that in the past as well. They've said that people who don't want to work need to be paid for not working, need to be paid for their lifestyle. That, you know, if everything you need to survive is an entitlement, housing, food, medical care, well, what need is there for you to do anything else with your life if everything is given to you at an acceptable level? And that's the point. Acceptable level, as in the sort of middle-class lifestyle that people strive for, the lower classes strive for, that needs to be handed to you on a silver platter. That needs to be the default, that you start out that way. But if that's the case, if you have a comfortable living, why would you do anything else? If you're living comfortably, the government's paying for it, why would you move? Why would you do anything? Why would you ever leave your home except to go get food or something? Why would you work if it's all given to you and at an acceptable level? And that's where the socialists get human nature terribly wrong. people aren't going to go work altruistically. People are going to need to be forced to work if they aren't given any reason to do it. If everything is free and acceptable quality, if everything is free at an acceptable quality, then there's no need to do anything more. There's no need to earn it. There's no need to go to a job where you have to sweat all day to keep the lights on for other people. More Silk or Joe Show after this break.
Many Americans believe HIV is no longer a serious health concern, but experts say that misconception, along with lingering stigma, can delay testing and treatment. While advances now allow people to live long, healthy lives with HIV, early diagnosis and staying on treatment remain critical. Helen Everett, a pharmacist with CVS Specialty, explains.
Today's treatments offer more options, including single daily pills and long-acting injectables, with fewer side effects, making it easier to stay on therapy and maintain an undetectable viral load. As needs evolve, personalized care for healthy aging is essential.
For patients like Christopher Hooper, that support has been life-changing.
When I was first diagnosed, HIV felt like a death sentence. Today, it's completely different. And with support from my CVS specialty pharmacist, I'm able to stay on track and live a healthy life.
Regular testing, early diagnosis, and consistent care are key. Visit cvshealth.com to learn more.
Summer is in full swing, and whether you're traveling by land, air, or sea, health experts say a little planning will go a long way in keeping you healthy away from home. CVS Pharmacy is helping travelers get ready with convenient services from passport photos to travel vaccines. CVS pharmacist Dr. Amy Lynn Valentine shares tips to prepare for your journey.
Fill prescriptions early and pack extra medication in case of delays. Keep medications handy while traveling. Put together a basic travel health kit with pain relievers, motion sickness medicine, sunscreen, hand sanitizer, disinfecting wipes, and first aid supplies. Check with a healthcare provider about international travel health recommendations and necessary vaccines at least 4 to 6 weeks before your trip. Need passport photos? CVS Pharmacy offers quick compliance services and makes travel prep easy and convenient.
Visit cdc.gov for more information or check cvs.com for travel-specific resources.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone, for Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed. And they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover guitar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, It's a heavy moment. This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all gotta help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're gonna be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe here. We're wrapping up the hour with Dr. Steve Bonta, publisher of the New American Magazine and a longtime contributor to them, writing on economics, foreign affairs, and American politics, among other subjects. Dr. Bonta, appreciate you joining us. How are you today?
Hey, great to be here. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. So the Democratic Socialists, they seem to have no idea how the world works, and their next target is to abolish ICE, abolish the Senate, and abolish the presidency. And I probably abolish a lot of other things, too. Do they really have any idea what they really want to do, or are they just saying what feels good in the moment with no long-term plans?
Oh, no, I think they know what they want to do. They don't call them radicals for nothing. They want to do away with the current system, root and branch. And that means, you know, the Constitutional Republic with all of its checks and balances and everything else. They want to get rid of it. They see it all as instruments of oppression and obviously as intolerable obstacles to reaching their goals, which is, you know, radical egalitarianism and collectivist policy.
So what exactly then would their society look like that would be so different from ours? Because either these people, we know that they are the ones who want to put conservatives in gulags. We've heard some of their people talking about that, you know, in leaked audio footage back in when Bernie Sanders was campaigning in 2016. You know, they're talking about gulags for conservatives and things like that. So clearly they do believe in prisons and all that sort of thing. I mean, you had that radical socialist candidate in Texas who talked about putting Zionists in a gulag and castrating them as well.
Well, fortunately, we have, you know, a century of eloquent testimony of exactly what the radical left does when they do achieve ascendancy over, you know, all the machinery of power. We saw it in the Soviet Union. We saw it. We continue to see it in China and North Korea and Vietnam. We saw it in Eastern Bloc countries, and we saw it in numerous other countries that people don't even think of, like Ethiopia, for example, that adopted Marxism for several decades. And there's no question. They use terms like, you know, a lot of people are going to get the wall, which means they're going to, you know, send out death squads and shoot people, you know, impromptu. That's what they want to do, and that's always been their MO. So, yeah, I mean, the problem with things like the Senate and the Electoral College and all the other things that they complain about is that they ultimately constitute various internal and external checks on the power of government. And they don't like that because they believe in the absolute in absolute fidelity to the state, and that the state is the way towards, you know, the ultimate perfectibility of man. That's what they want. You know, they may not express it in so many words, but that's what they aim for. And anything that stands in their way needs to be torn up root and branch.
Kind of ironic, too, because they say, oh, we're on stolen land, and they have all these land acknowledgments. But what would their ideal government do to native populations who didn't want to be part of it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, we kind of see a little bit of that in China, for example, where the, you know, the Chinese Communist Party is incredibly intolerant towards various ethnic minorities and continues, even as we speak, to try to eradicate the culture and language of, say, the Mongolians of Inner Mongolia. And, of course, everybody knows about the Uyghurs in Xinjiang province and various others, including Chinese Muslims, by the way, are all under pressure to assimilate completely because, in their view, China is Han Chinese, and that's it. And that's, you know, that's not just a cultural trait of the Chinese. Now, in the Soviet Union, you know, by contrast, they were a little more accommodating toward their various ethnic minorities. They even set up autonomous republics and so forth. But, you know, it depends on the culture. I mean, probably if the American radical left came to power, they would probably try to make Native American spiritualism or shamanism the official state religion or something like that. I don't know what form it would take, but I do know that the ruination of the economy and the inevitable oppression that would accompany, you know, a true left-wing government would make life miserable for everyone, including the Native Americans and everybody else. So.
So. Yeah, and I don't think that they would really particularly tolerate anyone who wanted to be different, who wanted to, you know, be like on a reservation separated from the government, perhaps. There'd be low tolerance for that, because they would see that as resources that they themselves need.
Well, it ultimately comes to that, doesn't it? Because, I mean, we tend to think of environmentalism, you know, this excessive solicitude for Mother Earth and all this sort of thing, as being, you know, endemic to Marxism. But it really isn't. I mean, in its original form, Marxism and communism were very much pro-industrialization and pro-agriculture. And one of the really shocking things, quite aside from the body count, that was revealed when I'm old enough to remember this, you know, when the Berlin Wall went down and the former Eastern Bloc countries were finally laid bare, not to mention, you know, the Soviet Union, a.k.a. Russia itself. The degree of environmental degradation was astounding. You know, I mean, the Tatra Mountains and what's now, you know, the Czech Republic, you know, were just deforested and, you know, covered with, you know, toxic runoff, all this type of thing. And so, you know, I mean, ultimately, socialism leads to far more environmental, for people who care about such things, far more environmental degradation than the free market does. And we saw this. But the left is undeterred in insisting that this time around it will be different. And, you know, when they come to power, you know, they're going to put an end to all this irresponsible capitalist exploitation of the natural resources, and the forests will grow back, and we'll learn anew that the coyote and the mountain lion are our brother and sister, and all this type of thing, you know. And in point of fact, you know, they are extremely cynical, and they will do whatever they can to attain power. And of course, you know, socialism, because it is inherently consumptive and not productive, will quickly, you know, destroy, you know, the reservoir of wealth the United States has, as it has done in so many other countries, including, you know, countries like the UK, and now, of course, Canada is an interesting example. So, you know, and then that will mean, inevitably, that we'll have to cut more forests and farm the land more intensively just to survive, all the usual things. So that's going to be the outcome if we allow these people to. And we've kind of strayed a bit from the original topic, but it's all of a piece, because what we're discussing is a mindset. And this mindset embraces not just radical political reform, like let's get rid of, you know, the Senate and the Electoral College, and let's make the government more democratic and egalitarian. But it also embraces, you know, all of these economic and social outcomes that they desire.
Right. Anything to push themselves above the other of the population. And, you know, one such example of that we can see right now, actually, regarding the environment, is how, you know, people are living in New York City, where at the very same time that Taylor Swift is having her billion-dollar wedding, 10,000 people have their power cut because the grid can't support it. Why? Because they decided to favor the environment over providing electricity to the people.
Well, and I'm looking, even as we speak, I'm looking at a consequence of this sort of nonsense out my window, because I live in central Wisconsin, and right now the sky is darkened with smoke from wildfires, primarily from Canada, that are, you know, have become an annual event now. It didn't used to be, but now every summer, you know, Canada burns, and the northern tier of states deals with this stuff because they don't know how to manage their forests for various arcane reasons. So, you know, so here, there you are.
All right, well, Dr. Steve Bonta, appreciate you joining us again, listeners. He's publisher of the New American Magazine, and we are done with y'all for this hour of the Silk Road Joe Show. Appreciate y'all tuning in. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-978-0600 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.